praise team. Why don't we do something a little different tonight, shall we? Let's close the gap. Let's all sit together in a little circle. Let's see what happens. Instead of, come on, do it, let's move. And I'm not going to make a speech, but I'll try to get us going on a little more kind of discussion-oriented thing. Because I think it's kind of, could be fun. Is it going to distract you if I hold the microphone still? Vibe check. Okay. Does the music stand low enough? My chair is higher. Is that okay, too? Here's the thing, man, that we're going for tonight. Thank you already. Because that little move that you did is probably the one of the coolest things that's happened to me all day. Where we just said, all right, let's just do something else. You're so flexible, and it's so weird to do that. You already kind of had your turf staked out, and that was awesome. Let's talk about Jesus in the Bible and kind of what that means for us. I think a cool thing to kind of broad stroke kind of get us going is this poem we've been looking at by Maya Angelou. You guys know her? By now you do, a little bit. Somebody want to stand up and read this, kind of Maya Angelou's, young Maya Angelou style? She's super old now, but just read it for us.
When we come to it, we, this people, on this wayward floating body, created on this earth, of this earth, have the power to fashion for this earth a climate where every man and every woman can live freely without sanctimonious piety, without crippling fear.
Thanks, Jamie. What do you think of that little part? It's part of a bigger poem. She was kind of giving the United Nations leaders, it's kind of sticking it to them in the mid-90s to try to get their heads right. Does this do anything for you? Or what images maybe speak to where you're at?
To
even make a climate, right, where we don't have to have that. Because sanctimonious used to mean holy and devoted to either like a particular faith or religion. And the last, especially 150, 200 years, it's changed in usage. And now it exclusively means it's a hypocritical devotion. So it's like seeming like sanctimonious now has a negative connotation to it, that you would seem like you were super into it, but really you're into something else, but you're trying to appear like you're doing it. And that's not really helpful when bringing people together. I think, going back to what Greg said, this fear thing, I kind of just was reflecting about fear, and that's what I hope to get us thinking about. Now, some of these things are really difficult to talk about in a group, especially if, I know most of you so pretty well even, but we don't all know each other, so we don't want to really just get into like, what are you most afraid of today? Let's just not do that. But what we can do maybe is, here's a couple of things that I was just thinking about, and I tried to use a new skill on PowerPoint that I think kind of works okay. But, you know, some days I wake up, and the only thing that gets me out of bed is knowing that I get to go to bed in a couple hours. Because the things that are going to happen to me are going to be jacked. And I don't feel up for it. You know, I have a lot of relational problems. Maybe you do too. Some of them are with people I love or who I, are close to me, even like family of origin stuff. If I try to reach out to somebody who I don't really know if they want to have some kind of reconciliation process, I'm afraid of that, how they're gonna take it. Or what if I feel shame about that? When I have injuries, wonder if I could actually forgive. Do I have the stuff? Like, I'm afraid that what I say is I'm trying to forgive somebody, I am forgiving them. That's just, I'm lying to myself. And I'm still carrying the baggage that goes with the wound. You know, wondering if I'm ever going to find somebody who actually loves me in a way that I want to be loved and need to be loved. And this is particularly harder for people who supposedly have people that love them or say that they love them, and they don't do a good enough job, or they don't do it in a way that satisfies us. You know, or thinking about time, we never have enough time to make the donuts or to squeeze the sausages. There's a, when Pizza Brain started a sausage pizza, and there are a lot of like pictures of them doing like weird stuff to sausage. And imagine if that was your job every day. You know, or like for those of us who have kids, like I'm glad Siobhan was talking about that earlier. It's like, I'm afraid that everything I try to do with my children just screws them up worse. And you know, my kids, just because they have a weird dad, like they're gonna. Luckily, their mom's okay, but it's gonna make them weird, and I can't really control a lot of the ways that it gets weird. But some of these, do you struggle with these kinds of questions too? And there's probably like you get a bunch. You could make a longer list about yourself that's a little more personal, that maybe aren't general. And for just a couple minutes today, try to get in touch with those fears, and realize that it's okay to be afraid. It's okay to have them. I mean, we want to like apologize or have a disclaimer of like, yeah, but I'm afraid, but I know I shouldn't be. Just for a moment, allow yourself to just, it's all right to be scared. It's all right to have fear. It's all right to be crippled by it. It's all right to be afraid of the threats out there. And Jesus' whole deal with you is not to make you feel bad for being afraid or to even just take away the fears, but to come into the fear and show us another way, because we don't have to be afraid. But I think all these fears, especially the ones, oh, do I have enough time? There's that one. Do I have enough energy? There's that too. See how it worked though? Like, boop, 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 boop. One day I keep threatening some of my friends that I'm going to figure out how to use sound animations on the thing so that they're all like, you know, bang. I really only need two sounds. If I had like a bang and I had like a p-dum, psh, I would probably be fine. Or if I had a third, it would be the beginning of Sweet Child of Mine. If I could just, because imagine like that would have been so much better if Sweet Child of Mine was playing in the background, you know? Here's the thing, though, about a lot of these fears is the reason that we're afraid, the reason that they're so relevant to us is because it's time sensitive. All those things require us right now, and we don't have enough stuff to do it. And we feel bad about that, and the reason we don't have enough stuff, we don't have enough time, is because time is ticking away, and you know that you are going to die. And if you're like me and you have people that were close to you that died, a lot of times that happens, and it is not a good thing, and it's not at a good time, and it wasn't right. That even makes it scarier, because you don't know when death is coming for you, but we know that we're going to die. And then when we start to think about things more finitely, the less time we have to actually do something. The less time I have to actually learn how to play piano. The less time I actually get to learn how to paint or do these things that I wanted to do, or like have my kids be at a certain age when they're sweet, before they're wild and obsessed with being sexy or something like that, which is probably coming in a couple years if I can't get more Mennonite into them. But we know that we're going to die. And this is just the condition that you wake up in. And now I'm going to talk about just, I want to get us thinking about this vision stuff, your eyes. Every day I wake up, my eyes are adjusted to darkness. I'm used to them. And that's actually where I prefer to stay. So I know some of you, I don't make you want to make you feel bad for being like an early riser or like a, you know, get up and go kind of person. That ain't me. And right now, it's really not me. This time of year, always, when it gets cold, I want to stay. And so, like, to open my eyes, I also should just know, I wake up after the sun is up now. And some of you have little kids or you're farmers or something, so you're up before then. But I struggle with light. My eyes are just happy being in dark time. I actually am up more when it's dark than when it's light. That's my life right now, in this time of year, because it's daylight savings, supposedly. But this is the journey that we're going to try to be making. And Jesus, I just want to look at this passage of John, because Jesus addresses death all the time in the Gospels. Particularly, he's talking about how we're dealing with death. And in the beginning part of John, he's by the lake again. He's gathered with a lot of people who love him. People who are coming and are drawn to him from all over the place. And at this moment, too, some of his biggest critics are there. And they're just getting in his face right before this little stanza happens. And they're saying to him, you know, what is... he's saying things like, I'm coming from heaven. And they respond with, how can you say that you come from heaven when I know your parents? I know that you came out of somebody's body. How could you come from heaven? You know, and that's kind of looking at Jesus again with these finite sorts of what I want to call just dead person eyes instead of these resurrection eyes. So here's Jesus responding to them. Does anybody feel like, let's see, want to get reading on that? To for a second, because now's where it's really going to get weird. He's already talking in the third person, right, about himself. He's talking about this cosmic relationship, and now he's going to talk about food. Say that's got some wildness, yeah. And this thing about that he's going to get more into is about flesh eating and drinking blood and stuff like that. And like Greg was pointing out, like how kind of cool it was for people to be able to understand blood of the lamb, because they, like, if you wanted chicken nuggets back then, you had to go kill the chicken. You had to have blood. You know, it wasn't like now you want chicken nuggets, you know where to get them. You know, you don't have to deal with the blood. We don't even like the blood. When particularly Jesus' ethnic and religious group, the Jews, had all kinds of weird blood restrictions. Not weird to us, but I mean just blood restrictions and stuff about eating flesh, especially eating human flesh, because that wasn't as frowned upon in all cultures like it pretty much is today. So Jesus is going to start talking that stuff, and they're going to start flipping out, because they think he's talking about this, like, I'm going to cut off my thumb and you're going to put it in your mouth. I'm going to cut off my finger and you're going to grill it. And then you're going to drink the juice and then you'll never die, because I'm like a, you know, this person performing these weird rites. Okay? This is early in the Gospels. Jesus hasn't really got his thing out there yet. It's nice, though, to read the Gospels in a way that you know Jesus is going to die and rise from the grave. The people who he's talking to didn't know how that goes. The other just thing I want to point out is he he's bringing up this manna thing, where he's starting to say, like God gave you bread. That had to do with more than just God giving bread. The whole formation of the people group that they're a part of, most of them, had to do with this story about God magically making this bread-like substance appear on the desert floor 6 days a week for 40 years and sustained them. Their story, their narrative that their nation is built on is about trusting and depending on God and God providing for you, this trust of God. Their national narrative was not, we got to this continent and it was empty of all people and it was given to us. Their national narrative is not like, we decided to fight against the tyranny of the king. Their national narrative is not about like, we're going to have a new form of government that everybody has say in. That's not what they're talking about. Theirs is about trust in God, who even down to the details of not making them work on the Sabbath to eat, took care of them. The trust is essential to unraveling fear. And the trust is also the trademark for making this transition from like waking up in the morning with dead people eyes into seeing the world through resurrection eyes. And you need to go through this process every day. How so far is that the resurrection stuff that Jesus is talking about working for you? Is that passage just too weird? Let's talk about it a little bit. Thinking about, like these two are saying, thinking about resurrection, and can you actually get to a spot where you're even looking at things that you're afraid of rather than looking at them through this way of like, it's finite, it's over, into even just seeing this endless possibilities that Jesus, who, and the resurrection deal too, does not say we're not going to suffer. It does not say it's not going to be hard. It doesn't say you're going to screw it up. It doesn't say you're ever going to do it really well. But can that change the way we're even seeing our fears? Can that lead towards trust? Can that lead towards making that space that Maya Angelou talked about, that's a climate where people don't need to suffer through your fake holiness or your or the fears that bind us? It's a tough question to just kind of respond to, I know. I think a couple of basic ways that we can do it. One of them, you gotta just kind of acknowledge that the circumstances of your life right now make it very difficult for you to make that transition on a daily basis. Whatever's going on with you makes it hard to have some resurrection eyes. And I know that maybe it feels like I'm acknowledging your pain too much or something, or I'm just kind of saying, no, you're having a hard time, and that's fine. Because I think so often, especially when we think like Jesus is shooting out the resurrection tube and I need to go like 150,000 miles an hour or else I'm missing the party or something like that. When really, like, we're all having a hard time all the time. We're afraid, we're stuck, and we're kind of screwing it up. And it feels like that. And like most of us have that sensation about 20 times a day. I made a mistake. I don't like the way my life is going. I don't like my job. People are mean to me all the time. I have friends that I don't like anymore. I think my friends don't like me anymore. You know, like we're just constantly going through this stuff. Why am I still doing things that I know I don't want to do? And why don't I do the things that I think are most important? You know, this is a constant thing. But to get into that space, to change over, to let your eyes adjust to the light of the resurrection, takes work. And we got to, that kind of trust, you got to first of all trust God. That even, say, if you don't have enough food right now, that you might tomorrow. Or that if you do right now, that you're gonna later, you're gonna be taken care of. And there's a few ways to work that out. So a lot of it, you know, this is Circle of Hope, man. Be part of a cell. You probably can't do it really well. Probably can't make it to every meeting. That stuff doesn't matter. But making a little microcosm of the church that you can be a part of, that even you could talk to the people about the things that are holding you from moving forward into a person whose eyes are adjusted to the light or have this resurrection eyes. They help a lot. Getting to meetings like this is a big deal. You made it tonight. It's so good. Worshiping together, however you're able to do that, whether, you know, I took probably 15 minutes just twisting up wires, fabrics, and yarn, and that was awesome, you know, and we're singing together and moving around. Like, it's really meaningful to just do that. I don't know about you, but I have, like, other stuff that I could be doing right now that would be fun, too. And some of it would be, like, you know, not a good thing to do. I also could do a lot of some good stuff instead of being at a public meeting, right? We're doing this on purpose, and that's a good thing to do. And if you can't make it to the meeting all the time, you're normal. And, you know, there are other even things that are stimuli that we're doing together that could help keeping you kind of getting you out of your spiritual bed every day. And even like listening to the audio recordings, you know, we try hard to like record them, not because we like think that everything we do just needs to get broadcasted into the cyberspace or something, but because we want it to be a resource for you if it's helpful. You know, we use things like Circle of Hope Daily Prayer. Continue to get pointed towards resurrection together. The most two important things, though, are going to be spending time every day with Jesus, asking and getting your vision adjusted. If you could do it for an hour or two every day, that would be really healthy, and you would be different. If you could do 15 minutes, that's pretty good, too. And I have a feeling like a lot of people feel bad about how much time they spend with Jesus trying to get their eyes adjusted every day. I don't know how to help you get over that, but I want you to. God doesn't like feel as bad as you do about it. That's just reality. Like whether you can, but if you can make some conscious time every day, even 15 minutes, and if you can't do it all in one chunk, just pretend that you have a bowel problem and you have like to do 3 5-minute increments throughout the day, and like even just tell people or whatever, like, I got to go. I'll be back in 5, you know, and go pray for 5 minutes. You can do subversive things to pray. That would be good. And the last thing is that's really important is to ask for help. If it's hard for you to get going, the cell are good people to talk to about that. They could probably help you solve some of your issues, solve some of the problems that keep you from getting in that kind of resurrection vision so that we can live this resurrection out today, because we need to create that climate where people can be spared from the, you know, the people who just think that the way that they think about stuff is the only correct thing and everybody else is a moron. Let's spare people from that. Let's make some space. Let's make some space away from fear, too, where Jesus is rising from the dead. And the people in your cell have ideas. So even if it's like, I don't know, for instance, there's a lot, when my kids were younger, we had like major issues trying to do anything because there's the kids. You know, so sometimes we would have to ask people to just hang out with them with small increments of time so that, you know, at one point it was so Martha could like take a shower, which at one point became like this like celebratory act, you know, or like to just take a little walk or do something like that. Your issues might be more complicated than just having a little needy person who you can't leave alone yet, or your dog or whoever your thing is, you know. My dog baby. I have two like dog babies that are now big, you know. But ask for people to help you out. They might not be able to respond to your demand or your complete neediness, but they'll help you, and you'll be healthier for getting them involved in it. What do you think? Do any of those things make sense to you? I want to say more. Okay, go for it, Carl.